He's Dave Parkinson. I'm Adrian Jackson. Let's hit the buttons.
Keeping you up to date with everything rugby league. This is the Final Hooter on Radio General.
Parky, how are you?
Really good, thanks, Ed.
Yeah, I'm alright as well. I'm not bad.
We've had our fill of rugby league over this last couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's been a busy old couple of weeks within the world of rugby league, hasn't it?
It has. You've been speaking to legends.
So have you.
I've been speaking to all kinds of different people, to be honest. We're going to be hearing from Reece Lovegrove a little bit later on. You spoke with Phil Cantillon, ex-Widnes great, obviously. We're also going to be hearing reaction from the Saints versus Wigan ladies game as well in the Women's Challenge Cup quarter-finals. And, there's a small matter as well of John Duffy being really happy about a win that Lee picked up against Bradford.
Listen, every coach is happy when they win games.
Oh, most definitely,
just not happy when they lose games.
No, no. And I know that John Keir wasn't happy with that game, that's for sure.
He'd have been filthy with it, wouldn't he? His stress and all that stuff.
I'm guessing that you'd have to be good at dealing with stress in rugby league management, wouldn't you?
You'd have to be, yeah.
Because you're surely only a couple of games away from pressure being put on you, aren't you?
Yeah, you're only as good as... It's a results-based game, isn't it? So you're only as good as your last matches. But new to the world of rugby league coaching, had a relatively successful career as a player, did Reece Lovegrove. He's decided for his first big gig as a rugby league coach, he's taking Cougar Mania.
Yeah, I got to catch up with him after their game against London Scholars at the weekend. This is the gist of our conversation, taking up the story from when he left Hull Kingston Rovers. Well, I'm delighted to be joined by new Keith LeCougar's boss, Reece Lovegrove. And Reece, a lot of people would have maybe followed your story of your long spell that you had at Hull Kingston Rovers, moving to the capital with London Broncos, and think, have you ended up becoming a head coach?
It's been a windy road. I think obviously at London, sort of, I had a lot of issues with concussion, and really struggled sort of bedding in down there. Great people down there, Henderson, Ward, all the amazing people, but it just didn't quite work, didn't quite fit for me. Especially with my issues with concussion, I wanted to move back home. So I was really, really lucky that I managed to get a spell at Bradford. But then after 6 months out with concussion, I got knocked out after three games. So that kind of the specialist come knocking on the door and sort of said, look, enough's enough, which was a bit difficult because I think I was only 28 at the time.
How do you handle that? Because, I mean, you've been playing the game, I'd imagine, since you was like 8 or 9 year old.
Yeah, it was difficult because I'd never really worked a day in my life. I went to a sports school. I signed at Cronulla Sharks when I was 15. I went straight into full-time from school. And I just assumed that as long as I applied myself and kept my nutrition decent and I performed on the field, I'd be able to play to 32. And then if I wanted to, I could drop down a couple of divisions and play to the 34. Geez, Jeremy Thackeray's 38 and still jogging about. But I just thought I always had a safety net. And it was tough like when sort of that was torn away. And I sort of had to step, and obviously unfortunately Bradford went into administration at exactly the same time, so I had no safety net there, so I pretty much had to step straight into full-time work from second dot, really.
So then how did your opportunity come to get into coaching then?
I was fairly lucky, actually. Paul Cook called me. Obviously I played with Paul Cook at Hull KR, and he'd been at Doncaster, and Gary Thornton was in charge there, and Paul called me and said, look, understand what's happened at Bradford. I know your head could be all over the place a little bit, but it's really important that you don't just walk away from the game. It's been a big part of your life, and at the moment it was difficult. I didn't really want to be a part of it after the last 12 months I'd had, but he said, no, look, stick with it. There's a strength and conditioning job going at Doncaster. So Gary Thornton was really kind and took me on down there, and so I went down there. I was S&C for sort of a season and a half down there.
I mean, it's great that you've got people like that involved in rugby league who are willing to sort of like, hey, you've got a chance here.
Yeah, I was really lucky. Like I said, I was lucky that Cookie looked after me when I first moved over when I was 20, when I first signed Hull KR 2007. So it was interesting. Like, he was first there when I moved down there when I first came over, and obviously he was there at the end as well, which was really, really good. And then obviously when sort of Gary got moved on, Pete Green took over, and myself... sort of in there, and it was an interim period before Rich Horn came in, and I kind of got the bug a little bit, and I thought, oh, this is kind of cool, I kind of like this. But obviously then Rich stepped in and I jumped in at S&C with him, but then I got an opportunity. I kind of spoke to the specialists and I was like, well, I've had enough of not playing. I thought, I want to play again. And he said, not a chance. But I said, nah. I said, well, I'm going to play no matter what. And he said, well, fine. A bit of damage limitation. You can't play rugby league. So they're like, oh, sweet. I'll go play rugby union. So I ended up playing in the Yorkshire Dales rugby union for a little bit.
Is that near here?
Yeah, just because my mum lives up at Pateley Bridge. Okay. So I love that part of the world. So it gave me an excuse to get up there. And unfortunately, I then got knocked out two or three more times playing that. So literally my last concussion there, Ben Hardcastle was the academy here. And I was literally working across the road just here. And he said, look, mate, he said, everything's gone wrong here at the moment with obviously what happened in the off season. But Craig Lingard's sort of give him a call. Here's his number. Do you know what I mean? So if you want to come down, I know you've got a lot to offer, type thing. So I give him a call and just ask if I come pick up cones. I said, look, I'll come down. I'll watch. I'll help with a bit of wrestle. Do you know what I mean? Whatever. I just want to get back in the game. I've just been knocked out again. I was worried that I'd have to go through what I'd just gone through 3 years before at Bradford. And Craig was amazing. Do you mean brought me in, and obviously the club steadied. And then he asked me if I'd be his assistant, and he was really, really good. Do you mean some of the stuff I learned off him was first class. So it certainly put me in good stead for this last little bit. And then obviously they put Phil Larder sort of there as well. So I've had some decent people to learn off.
Is this a job now you're in the top job that you're just learning week on week?
I kind of apply the same principles to myself as I do the players. I rather the term teach rather than coach, and I apply the same to myself. Like I want to learn every week. I want to learn off the players. I want to learn off my staff. I expect them to challenge me. Yes, there are times where they can challenge me, but I set up those times where they have opportunities, obviously, but there are times where I expect them to do what I tell them to. But certainly in those times where I allow them to challenge me, like I expect them to challenge me. I expect them to challenge my ideas because they could be wrong. I'm pretty sure they're right, but everyone thinks their ideas are right. And not only that, if they challenge me on my concepts and processes, I have to defend them. And to defend a position, you have to know it very, very well. So I really try and create that environment. It's been a slow process so far. I haven't been in the job too long, but that's certainly something we're looking at moving forward, is to create that learning environment where ideas are passed around and people have to defend their positions.
I think certainly when you've got people like Feather and you've got people like Thackeray, who've been around the game for a long, long time as well, they've got ideas that maybe they can chuck into the mix.
Yeah, it definitely helps. Like you said, like you got Jamie Thackeray, you've got James Feather, but you've also got Jack Miller, Ben Hardcastle, Jimmy, people like that are great. And there's Chris Cullimore as well, a young fella, hasn't played many games, but he started today. He's showing lots of leadership qualities as well. There's some really good people at this club. And I think some of them have some bright futures. It's just a matter of just taking, like I said, each training session at a time, and then each week at a time, and then try and get the results and get a little bit better every week.
I get the feeling you're enjoying this challenge.
Yeah, I love it. But I think I love it more because I know how bad it is on the other side. I've done 80, 90 hour weeks working nights in factories to pay the bills after I dropped out of Bradford. I know exactly what's on the other side of the coin. So downloading videos at 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning and cutting clips. I'd rather be working 80, 90 hours a week doing something I love than in a factory.
Does that perhaps put you in a stead where you can understand from a part-time player's point of view? Because obviously you've been in that sort of full-time environment for such a long time.
Definitely. I think it's definitely helped me. Coming out of full-time, obviously I was a sandbox environment. Everything's created to make you the best possible player. Do you mean, whereas well, I've got blokes that are coming in and have been lifting scaffolding all day. Do you mean it's difficult to apply the same principles, but it definitely helps. I think I'm lucky as well to have an amazing family base at home. My fiance and my two lads are out here now who keep me grounded and also put up with me kicking the dog, so to speak. But no, it's been good. It's been a tough road, but we're really enjoying it so far. And I think that's why I don't mind the graft, I don't mind the grind, I enjoy teaching, I love teaching young kids because I want to make young kids better players. I think that's where the future is at for this club. We're not going to be bringing in, we're not going to be able to buy the best players in the country, so we have to create the best players.
I'm going to ask you more about the game that we've just witnessed. What were your thoughts on it? 38-26, good win if you look at the scoreboard. I thought it was a really good first half. Yeah. The second half maybe didn't get going, but you still had to show a lot of character.
Yeah, I think, as I just said to the boys then, they know the sort of standards that they've set for themselves and that I expect. But they would say that they didn't reach those then. But they're long-term standards. As long as we're moving towards those standards, and as long as we eventually reach those standards, we'll be a very, very good rugby league team. I'm not expecting them to reach it this week, or next week, or the week after that. I'm expecting them to make it, reach those standards next June, July.
And in saying everything that I've just said, you're beating the team that's second in the league.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so we're very, very happy with that. We knew the sort of threat that London brought, and like I said, I'm very, very happy with some of the signs that the boys showed. I was really, really happy with that. The biggest thing I was really happy with is that the systems that I'm putting in place are difficult to play. They're simple, but their execution is difficult. So the level and attention to detail is very, very high, and it requires a lot of concentration. And as you've seen in the games, as you saw then, like we went out to a lead, then we had a wobble. And then we come out second half and had another wobble, but then we brought it back. And that's probably the bit that I was happiest about, is that in those lapses of concentration when ball started going down, London started to get it on top. They could drag it back and they could get us back into process. And that was the biggest lesson that they took out of today.
The real good thing from my point of view watching that game was the link-up play between Hookers, two halfbacks, and the fullback at the back, Aitchison. Yeah. I thought that was a really strong spine for you.
Yeah, obviously a lot of players and a lot of coaches will say how important the spine is. I'd say it's even more so important in the way that we're going to be playing. I very much believe 7-6 lead, 9-1 secondary lieutenant, so to speak, but everyone else is a tool. They're the builders. If they need a hammer, they pick up a hammer. I'm going to give them the tool set that they need. And that's what all the players are now trying to sort themselves out. They know what I expect from positions. And some of the players are already that. And they're on the front foot straight away. Others are slowly realising that they need to become that. Obviously, then that's where the learning process is, and that's where you see it break down every now and then, because certain players will revert to the type of player they were before, which doesn't fit with my system. And that's why, as you see, like, we're bringing in players as we go, because I think there's certain other players that we're going to look to bring in that could push our group of players to learn that a little bit more. And then obviously if they're talented enough to leapfrog them and jump and grab their spot, I'll play anyone as long as they can prove to me they're good enough.
I guess that Cougar Park is going to become a really exciting place to come in over the next sort of 12 months with you at the helm.
I hope so. I intend to play an exciting brand of rugby. I know all coaches say that usually, but I intend to back that up. I expect my players to play from second dot. I've been watching video footage over the last couple of weeks, of the last few games, and where we haven't played, and I've said, look, play, and they said, oh, you mean like play, like from there? And I'm like, yeah, I expect them to be confident, and I'll teach them the abilities and the process and the skill sets they need to produce that style of rugby league, and I expect it to be played.
Keeping you up to date with everything rugby league, this is the Final Hooter on Radio General.
It is the Final Hooter on Radio General and loverugbyleague.com. Adrian Jackson and Dave Parkinson talking rugby league. We are the podcast for Love Rugby League. Thanks very much to Radio General for letting us use the studio. Craig Lingard used to be the coach. It's Reece Lovegrove who's the new man at Keighley. Last time Keighley had an Australian coach, it was Jason Demetriou, and look where he went.
I know, so you never know, do you? I hope that it's a really successful start to a long coaching career for Reece Lovegrove. I think certainly he's got the right temperament for it. I mean, you heard him there discussing about how he wants Keighley to play, and the fact that it's very precision orientated. So I get the feeling it's going to be really exciting going there to Keighley over the next couple of years. I just hope that he's able to get those players in that can perform the way that he's wanting them to.
I'll be watching how Reece Lovegrove goes between now and then. He's talking 12 to 2 years ish. See how he goes in his career as a head coach. Maybe he could end up in the NRL.
You never know, do you?
It wasn't the only new coach you spoke to last week. You also caught up with the women's newest head coach, and that's Chris Ratcliffe, who's replaced Amanda Wilkinson at Wigan.
You've taken over mid-season. What is that like, first of all?
It's not been too difficult of a transition, because there's not been big changes to make. I'm not coming in blind. You know, I've been there already as assistant, so I know the strengths that we've got and some of the challenges that we face, and unfortunately some of those challenges were quite evident today. And we've just got to be better as individuals. That, you know, fitness levels, I think, are something that we really need to be pushing, and it's difficult when the part-time players are working the hours that they are, but if you want to play at this level and be successful in these in the biggest games, then you've got to have that energy around the ball.
Let's take a slightly different tack, because obviously you were a player that played a lot in the Championship and in Division 1 with the likes of Rochdale and the likes of Blackpool. What's been your coaching path to get to this sort of stage?
I've been fortunate enough to be coached by quite a lot of good coaches, and you know, Bobby Goulding was a great motivator. Darren Shaw, Australian, quite technical. Martin Crompton, you know, really good technically. So I've certainly had good coaches that have coached me and learned from them as well. In terms of my own coaching, I think I got the level 2 qualification back when I was 16, when you as early as you could do so.
So you always had ambitions to go on and coach?
Yeah, and I'm a PE teacher in the day, so I suppose it's like on the job all the time. But at the same time, when you're playing, you have to put it to one side, and then I needed a bit of a break to bring up a young family and stuff. So yeah, it always has been something that I've enjoyed doing, and just waited and picked my opportunities really, and the opportunity to come and coach at Wigan was one that I couldn't have turned down a year ago, and then the opportunity to step up as head coach is obviously one that I've taken with open arms.
So has that been your path from sort of like not doing anything to stepping in, or have you like a varied coaching career?
Yeah, I just tended to do rep teams a lot of times. So I've been involved in women's program before.
We can't ignore that then, with rep teams.
Yeah, I've done a lot of the girls stuff. Like I said, it's just been selective about the opportunities rather than stuff that has been week in week out like we've got now, and different reasons for that. But I have always, you know, kept in touch in terms of coaching, and it's not like I've not been coaching for many years. I'll always do something each year, but they've just been some smaller occasions rather than week in week out stuff that we've got now.
Again, it'd be interesting to see how Chris Ratcliffe goes in his role as the new head coach of Wigan's women's Super League team.
Yeah, he's been in charge a couple of weeks now, actually. So, yeah, Amanda stepped down due to increased work commitments. But like you said there, he's been around the scene since they got set up, really. So, and from the sounds of it, he's pretty experienced as a coach. You heard him there. He's had his coaching badges since he was 16. Wow. So, you know, that's a long time,
young,
isn't it?
Aren't they?
So, yeah, but great bloke. I hope it's a success for him, though.
Wasn't a success for them in the Challenge Cup, though. They ran into a rampant St Helens team, and they lost out 36-0 to the Saints.
They did, yeah. I mean, it was a dominant performance from St Helens, who led 10 points to nil at half time. Leah Burke, a good Lather, and always nice to be able to push Lee out on these podcasts. Leah Burke scored a hat trick of tries. Other try scorers on the day: Zoe Harris, Tara Jones, Emily Rudge, and Lizzie Gladman, who were all outstanding for Saints. Faye Gaskin also kicked 4 goals as well. After the match, I had a chat with Derek Hardman, the Saints coach, and this is our conversation.
Well, Derek, we're catching up in the aftermath of a resounding victory, 36 points to nil in the Challenge Cup quarter-final. Well, it tells part of the story, that, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, I just can't. I'm so proud of the girls today, you know, to go out there and nil any team, but especially our local rivals. But I just thought we was professional today in everything we did, our completion, our kicks. We were just professional, and that's what got us to the back end of that score.
10 points to nil at half time. Was you quite pleased with the first half? Because you had to come up with a lot of defensive plays as well.
Yeah, I was, to be honest. One thing I said to the girls is we do need to be patient and we need to show a lot of composure. And I felt in my heart that we could get Wigan at the back end of the game. So I just wanted to go through our sets, and I just didn't want us to be impatient and try and force the game, because I knew it had come.
And that certainly happened. I mean, that last 20 minutes, you could almost relax because job was done.
Yeah, I won't say relax. You know, as a coach, especially in a game like this, it's very, very hard to relax. But I thought our bench, you know, we call them run-ons, we don't call them our bench players, but our run-ons were very good, because when they come on, they made an impact, and you know, we sort of like to finish teams off, and that's what their job is.
Perfect example of that was Lizzie Gladman, first touch, she scores a try in the first half.
Yeah, Lizzie brings a lot of energy and a lot of size off the bench, and that's her, that's what she likes. And one thing I said to Lizzie is that's her role. Her role is to come and give an impact, and she certainly did that when she came on.
Tara Jones also very good again at 9.
Yeah, Tara Jones works effortlessly. She's got a great engine and she's a very clever player, especially around the ruck, and when the big forwards are blowing, she loves to exploit that.
And a word as well about Leah Burke, because if there's a better finisher in the women's game, she must have that tag at the moment.
Yeah, we've got some outstanding outside backs, you know, and Leah being an ex-gymnast is a great finisher, and, you know, throughout the club we've got a lot of great finishes in Tommy Makinson as well in the men's team, so all the girls like to see what these boys are doing and then try and replicate that. But Leah's a great athlete.
What's she like to coach as well?
Oh, she's easy. She's so laid back, loves to learn, like a sponge. Anything you tell her, she just takes in, and that's all you can ask for from a player like Leah, because she's got all the attributes.
And you must be quite impressed as well, because isn't her sister coming through the ranks as well? She played off the bench today.
Yeah, that's right. Sister Rihanna is only young. I think Rihanna's 18, and loads of potential, and she's just got to be patient, which is quite hard really, but you know, she's certainly coming through the right way, and hopefully next year, the year after, we'll be looking for Rihanna to really push.
You ended up losing when it counted last season against Wigan. Does this go some way to turning the table somewhat?
Yeah, it does. It does. For me personally, I wasn't here last year, as you know. So for me, it's a new year. So for me, it's 2-0. So that's always nice for me. But you know, statistics are always nice, but I just want to focus on the performance, and I think if we're honest, we have honesty with each other, we'll get the performance in the back of it, and we can't worry about too much what other people do.
And certainly that was a cracking performance.
Yeah, it was. Like I said, big pitch, we wanted to get it at the stadium because we knew that would suit us, and I can't fault the girls. Their attitude all week has just been outstanding, and maybe, you know, what happened last year has helped us motivational wise, made us hungry. So yeah, real good performance, really happy. But again, like I always say, and I said in there, there's two more rounds to go before we do anything in this competition, and also there's a long way to go in the other competition. So again, we're halfway through.
Tell you what, any game between Wigan and St Helens is always a big game, isn't it? No matter what level of rugby league it is.
Yeah, it was massive. I tell you what, there was one point as well where they had fisticuffs. It was a really good game, actually. A lot closer than 36-0 suggests, but yeah.
St Helens players certainly seem to celebrate at the end. We could hear them in that interview.
Other results from the Coral Women's Challenge Cup quarterfinals: Leeds Rhinos ominously getting back into form, 74-0 success against Warrington. Keithley Albion lost out to Wakefield by 24-26, and Castleford Tigers, who are currently the team to beat in the Women's Super League, they won by 48-8 against Bradford. So that sets up the semi-finals. That draw took place at the weekend. St Helens have been drawn against Leeds, Wakefield against Castleford. At the time of broadcast, we wait to hear about kickoff times and venues, but we know that both games will take place on the 7th of July.
The Feel Better Station for Warrington Hospital.
This is Radio General.
Now, the final hooter with Adrian Jackson and David Parkinson.
Anyway, at the start of this podcast, we heard from Rugby League's newest coach in the shape of Reece Lovegrove. Mm-hmm. He was talking about after their game against the London Scholars in League One. How's League One looking at the moment?
Shaping up pretty well, to be honest. Yeah, Whitehaven out on top, but they're only just 1 point clear of Hunslet and Oldham. And the thing was, for Whitehaven, they lost to a last-minute try from North Wales Crusaders, Ashall, at the weekend. So that was a real thrill-a-minute ride of a game. Hunslet, as I said, tucked in just behind them alongside Oldham. Both of those teams picked up wins. Oldham picking a win up on the road at Workington, which is no mean feat. And Hunslet having a resounding victory against West Wales Raiders, who have replaced Keithley Cougars at the bottom of the table now. Keithley, despite having 12 points deducted from them for going into administration and a change of ownership at the start of the season, they are now in plus point differential. So that is a good thing as far as they're concerned. Mm. The rest of the playoff picture behind Oldham and Hunslet lines up with Newcastle Thunder have quietly gone about their business, got themselves into fourth spot. London Scholars have dropped from second to fifth thanks to that loss, and Doncaster are just about hanging on to the sixth spot, with Workington Town breathing down their neck. There's just 8 points difference between those two teams, by the way.
Anyhow, let's move forward to the Championship, and how's that looking?
Well, in the Championship, you have got you've got Toronto Wolfpack way out on top. I think it's something like 12 wins. They've gone on the bounce now. They look unbeatable. They defeated Toulouse Olympique at the weekend. That was a clash of the top two. So Toronto have 34 points. Toulouse Olympique, having lost out, are on 24 points. But again, this is warming up, this top five race, because tucked in behind on point difference only, Elite Centurions, if you asked me at the start of the season where Lee would be finishing, it would be nowhere in that top five, so they're having a tremendous season. York City Knights are still there or thereabouts, having got promoted last season from League One. They're sitting fourth with 24 points as well. Featherstone Rovers are fifth with 22 points. Sheffield Eagles just now sit outside the top five, having been second and third for much of the campaign. They have got 22 points. And then in 7th spot are Bradford Bulls with 20. Halifax tucked in a little bit behind them with 16. And then there's an almighty scramble towards the bottom of the table. It looks likely Rochdale Hornets are going to get relegated with just one win from their 17 games. But the other spot is between, well, the rest of the division. You've got Batley with 12 points, Widnes with 10 points, Swinton Lions with 10 points, having picked up a notable scalp to lose the other week for Swinton Lions. Dewsbury Rams, who haven't been able to buy a win recently, are sitting there with 9 points. And Barrow Raiders are on a bit of a renaissance as well. Their last two games, they've defeated Halifax and they've defeated Featherstone as well. So they've really found a little seam of form at the moment, but they still sit in that bottom two at the minute.
Last time around, you caught up with a very happy John Duffy after his lead team defeated Bradford Bulls 52-20, was it?
It was, yeah. Resounding victory in the end, and some brilliant tries scored, as you'll hear John describe now.
Yeah, another massive win for us. Spoke in the week about backing up a big performance, because we hadn't really done that, you know. Went to a summer bash, big performance, didn't turn it round the next week, and we've... You know, we've been like that all year, so we wanted to back up a big performance today, and we did, against a really good, well-coached Bradford team. To play with 12 men for 20 minutes against a team like that just shows what kind of team we've got and what kind of squad and people we've got in the, you know, in the playing group and the staff. So I'm really proud of everybody today. I'm glad we got the win for those fans.
There was some real guts at times as well, wasn't there? I mean, they must have got over the line about six times.
Yeah, our scramble was really good. Our first up contacts in the second half weren't too great, which we knew they'd come out firing after half time. But we scrambled really well, worked for each other really well. We scored some absolutely brilliant tries, you know, off the training pitch. So I'm really happy and proud of the group again.
I thought it was dealt with in the middle, though, in that middle. Douglas in particular, outstanding.
Yeah, well, we had to deal with a lot. Myself and Joe Cater had to do a lot of carries and tackling after Brooksy went off for his 10-minute spell there. I thought Jordan Thompson was outstanding on his debut as well. And I thought McKeown led us really well. I thought him and Liam, you know, shared the workload when they were on.
What was good as well was clinical. I suppose at times this season, that clinicalness hasn't been there, but it was today.
Yeah, we've been working on that and putting ourselves in scenarios at training. Because we fell short on that, like you say, early in the year. But we're getting better, but we won't fall in love with ourselves. We've got a mammoth task next week now, because we have three games in a week, so we've got to make sure we do the right thing this week. We'll recover tomorrow, but we'll probably recover again on Tuesday and use the pool and do the right thing, and hopefully go to Dewsbury with a full team.
How difficult is that with a part-time squad?
Yeah, it's really difficult. The amount of effort and time away from the families these boys put in is unbelievable, and you know, I'm really really grateful for the time and the effort that they put in away from the families, because some of them have got jobs who are away from Lee as well and have to travel. So it's tough, but everyone in the league is the same, apart from the full-timers, so we just get on with it, and we've got a good group.
It's like chucking an extra couple of Easters into the mix, isn't it?
This next one, yeah, I think if we get a result in the next round, I think you get a full week to prepare for the semi, if I'm right. So we'll just have to see how we go after Sunday. But all our focus now is Dewsbury.
Yeah, John Duffy rather happy with that win against Bradford. And he's mentioned three games in a week for the teams that are in the 1895 Cup. But on the field in the league, 90 points in two games suggest that the Lee are going in the right direction.
Yeah, they beat Dewsbury Rams 40 points to nil at the weekend. Douglas, who was heavily praised in that interview, scored two tries. Stephen Marsh as well, former Widnes player, scored two as well. So, yeah, they've reached a good run of form at the moment of the Centurions. But like you were saying, it's three games in a week. We've got the AB Sundex 1895.
Oh, yeah, that's
Cup.
A full title, isn't
yeah,
it?
Let's
sorry
give it
about
full
that.
Title.
Sorry, Derek.
There you go. So, got to give that a mention. So, yeah, the quarter-final stage is this coming Wednesday. So, Doncaster against Sheffield, Lee against Barrow Raiders, Widnes Vikings against Dewsbury Rams, and York City Knights against Batley Bulldogs. Interesting to note as well amongst this that Doncaster and Sheffield is being played in Featherstone because Doncaster's ground isn't available.
Yeah, and Lee are playing in St. Helens.
And Lee are playing in St. Helens because Lee Sports Village isn't available for pitch renovation.
Keeping you up to date with everything Rugby League. This is the Final Hooter on Radio General.
It is the Final Hooter. We're talking Rugby League on loverugbyleague.com, and thanks very much to Radio General for letting us use the studio. Let's step our toes into Super League, shall we? And I think Tony Smith has been given a taste of what to expect in Super League. He's making a welcome return back to the game as Hawkinson Rovers coach. Gets off to a winning start against Warrington and then gets brought down to earth with a bang by London Broncos.
Yeah, fair play to London Broncos, though. I mean, what's this now? Four wins on the trot? Is it three or four wins
three
on the trot?
Three or four on the bounce now, isn't it?
They're doing really well. They're playing some really nice rugby as well.
Mm.
You know, the way that they're playing is just tremendous.
I want them to stay up.
To be honest, so do I.
I think everybody does within the world of rugby league. I think everyone wants the Broncos to stay up and Leeds to go down.
It's creating a mad scramble at the bottom, isn't it? Because
yes.
At the time we're recording this, Leeds are being linked with just about anybody who might be potentially free before the end of the season. And on about swapping half their squad as well.
Desperate times.
It is, yeah. Hull Kingston Rovers, though. I mean, Tony Smith, you can visibly see already that he's improved them.
Yeah.
I think they lost narrowly against Wigan. They defeated Warrington very narrowly the week before last. They were good in patches, to be honest, against London, but London just played that little bit more controlled rugby and were perhaps that little bit better. Leeds just seem to be going from one crisis to another. Mm. They were better against St Helens, but never looked like they were going to win that game, in all honesty. And with the games that they've got coming up over this next few weeks, they could struggle to pick up even more points.
How's the table looking then?
So you've got St Helens way out on top. They could declare now Saints, to be honest, and they'd still make the grand final on the current form. Warrington there so far in front of third spot. They're 4 points clear of Hull FC. Hull seem to have put their issues that they were having of inconsistency behind them. They've gone sort of three or four wins on the bounce now, which is really encouraging for Lee Radford. Again, it seems just as everybody were talking about, maybe would there be a change being made up at the top at Hull. They've come out and they've performed for him, haven't they?
I mean, always they do, don't they?
They beat Catalan by 50 points again at the weekend, which is a brilliant result. Catalan, strangely enough, are still sitting in fourth position in this league, with Salford Red Devils having climbed into the top five. They'll be getting a nosebleed if they go any further, but what a season so far for Ian Watson, especially when everybody was tipping them to get relegated. Wigan tucked in just behind them, Castleford just behind them. But all those three sides that I mentioned on 18 points. Then you've got Wakefield on 16, Huddersfield on 14, London Broncos on 14, Leeds Rhinos on 12, Hull Kingston Rovers on 12 at the bottom.
So you've got to scramble at the top, well, for the rest of the playoff places, and you've got to scramble to avoid the trapdoor back into the Championship.
Yeah, you could argue, to be honest, that Catalan and Salford and Wigan, they're nearer the bottom than the other top, in all honesty, aren't they? Because of how things have stretched out there. But it's an exciting competition this season, Super League. I'm not too keen on maybe some of the quality. Some of the quality seems to be lacking in some games. But hey, it's making it interesting for everybody, though, isn't it?
Come on, the Broncos. Sorry, Leeds. I do apologise, but come on. Come on, come on, London Broncos, Danny Ward.
Danny Ward will be ringing you up, offering you his thanks, I think.
If he keeps his team up, he's got to be in the running for Coach of the Year, surely.
I think he's nearly in the running for it already.
Yeah.
I mean, to be honest, at this stage of the season, you would have probably been tipping them to be, several points adrift at the bottom of the table now. A lot of the sides that get promoted end up sort of really struggling in those lower reaches, but they've turned it around, haven't they? And they're playing some good stuff.
And in Leeds' next game, it's farewell to Callum Watkins, who's deciding to go straight away to Australia. Don't pass go, don't collect me £200.
To be honest, I don't blame him, though, because, I mean, I suppose they've sort of come to him and said, listen, we're going to be moving on at the end of the season anyway, so him and his management team have got onto it, and they've arranged this deal in Australia. I wish him the best of luck. I think
best
he's
of luck, yeah.
A brilliant player for Leeds over the last few years, and probably deserves a bit of luck heading his way after the last 12 months he's had.
Should we move away from the action and talk Rugby League World Records? We've got Phil Cancel on lined up.
Hey, why not?
Who, by the way, holds the record for the most tries scored by a forward.
48, isn't it?
48 in total. Broke even the great Ellery Hanley's record.
I remember Ellery Hanley getting that record as well when he was at Leeds. And before that, I think it was Bob Hay that also held the record as a scoring forward.
It's not the only record with this whole for world record.
Have you got this desperate now as a Widdies fan that you're looking at what records
Listen,
are held?
Phil Canton's got the record for the most tries scored by forward for Widnes.
Okay, that's definitely one on your list.
Keith Airwell representing Widnes. Well, he holds the most consecutive record.
He's a player in half,
wasn't he? 239 games consecutive for
Widnes. How many?
239 games.
239 games? How long did it take him to
five
that
seasons.
One? 5 seasons? That's nearly 40. That's what, 45, 46, 47 games a season?
A lot of games, isn't it?
My goodness.
Consecutively as well.
Wow.
As a hooker.
He'd be getting his block knocked off every week as well, wouldn't he?
Front row, yeah. Without a doubt, in the engine room.
So has he still got a nose left?
Probably hasn't. Probably hasn't. You don't know. Anyway, some other world records that came to our attention while we were looking at this. Oldest player.
Go on.
There's Dennis Gleeson. No relation to Martin Gleeson, by the way.
He's just headed off to Rugby Union, by the way.
He has. He's aged 70. He actually played for the State Rail Apprentice RLFC team. That's easy for me to say.
Hang on, so he's an apprentice at 70?
70 years of age and 9 days. That was in August 2006.
God, blimey.
Largest attendance for a Rugby League game, 107,558.
That's not counting Oddsall, surely.
No, it doesn't. It's for the NRL in 1999 final between Melbourne and St George.
Yep, I remember watching that game.
Now, we all like a hat-trick in rugby, don't we?
Oh, yes.
Fastest hat-trick, Chris Foreman, in an amazing 6 minutes and 54 seconds.
Wow, so next time I speak to Chris over at Workington, I'm going to ask him about that.
He scored those tries playing for Huddersfield against Doncaster in May 2002 in the semi-finals of the Buddies National Cup.
Wow.
Youngest international player?
Don't know that one.
Gavin Gordon.
Gavin Gordon?
17 years of age and 229 days old. Played for Ireland against Moldova in October 1995. He also scored a hat-trick in that game.
Did he? I wonder whether that was the youngest ever hat-trick scorer.
Fastest international try?
Oh, I don't know that one.
Bobby Fulton.
Wow.
Guess how long it took?
Go on.
15 seconds.
Wow.
He scored for Australia against France in Bradford in November 1970. Why were you playing in Bradford, by the way?
Probably because it was a World Cup, I think, 1970.
Maybe. Yeah, so some interesting records for you to have a think about. We're going to go out with the forward who scored the most tries ever in a season of Rugby League. It's the Widnes legend, Phil Cantillon. In the company of Widnes legend Phil Canton. Phil Canton, welcome back to Widnes. How does it feel to be back at the club where it all began for you?
Thank you. It feels great. Great to see so many old friends and fans and received a great reception from the fans at half time. Not been back to the UK for 8 years, emigrated to Australia, so I wanted to come and say hello to all the fans in the club.
You mentioned you moved to Australia. How did that come about and why did it come about?
I'm more of a lifestyle change. I managed to secure a visa and secure some employment over there, living close to Sydney, and we took the opportunity 8 years with the family.
Do you keep tabs on the World of Rugby League over there?
Oh, certainly. I certainly keep in touch with the Widnes scores and the Widnes progress. It's good to see that the Vikings, you know, are progressing now with a stabilised the club a bit. Really sad to hear what happened to the club a few months back, and it's good to see some of the players, you know, come out and support the club and the team really get behind the club.
Being back here, does it bring back all the memories from way back in the day?
Oh yeah, some great memories. I had 5 years here. I was fortunate to score some try scoring records, help the club get into Super League and stay in Super League, and also play for England and Ireland during that time. So fantastic memories, great relationship with the fans, and made some friends for life with the players.
You mentioned your scoring record. It's actually a world record you hold. I don't think many people know that.
Yeah, I believe it's still going. It's not something you'll look too back into. Breaking an icon of rugby league, Ellery Hanley's try scoring record is really, really special. That was 2001 with 48, and managed to score the most tries for the club at 7. A lot of it was down to the players and the team at that time as well, not just individuals.
You mentioned you've been here 5 years. What memories do you hold of the club?
really special memories. They're probably the best times of my life and my career. From a personal perspective, you know, as mentioned, scoring those tries, scoring records, scoring my 100th try against Castleford, the grand final, beating Oldham, and the world records at the home ground. So really, really special. But again, just really, really good being part of a team and being part of a special club.
Do you still keep touch with your former teammates?
Yeah, there's quite a lot of ex-Vikings living in Australia, so we do keep in touch every now and again. And it's really good to catch up with some old friends today at the club.
You're at the game today. What did you think of the game?
Good to see the Vikings getting a result against Barrow, and hopefully we move up in the league. Good to see really the young lads coming through as well. We've got 12 to 13 academy lads coming through, and good to see the investments in the youth, which hopefully are going to be the cornerstone of the club for many years to come.
Being retired over 10 years now, do you think the game's changed since your time?
Definitely changed. And different eras. You know, I played in the early 90s and 2000s, and the game changed a lot. Is it better or is it worse? Who knows, kind of thing. I think it comes from different eras. But I was really fortunate to play with a lot of good players during that time. Good to see people making their own mark in the game today.
What do you think of their standards in Super League then today?
To be honest, I don't really watch Super League too much. I watch a lot of NRL within Australia. I think a bit of chalk and cheese, if I'm honest. The real quality of when you watch the State of Origin is really, really good. But it's good to see that we're really investing in the homegrown talent and are giving them the opportunity to progress.
I'm sure when you walk that on the pitch, one or two Witness fans would have been remembering your tries. I'm sure they'll have special memories of yourself as well.
Yeah, I did ask a few questions around if I brought my boots, but you know, I'm way too old for that. But really good to hear the chance of Uai Cantillon, and really special memories, you know, with the fans. And I certainly appreciate, and the team certainly appreciate that support.
Radio General.